So far this week, I've been delving back into the heyday of the San Francisco traditional jazz revival with the music of Lou Waters, Wally Rose, Bob Scobie, and Turk Murphy. Well, today I'll be rounding off this Jazz Notes visit to San Francisco by talking to some of the people who are keeping this robust and hard-swinging style of music alive. One singer who specialises in the vaudeville songs of Bessie Smith and Ma Rainey is Pat Yankee, and she can often be heard around town with her Gentlemen of Jazz. Pat's a living link with many of the great names in the Bay Area's music, having started off as a dancer and then toured the world with Turk Murphy, singing songs like this one. You came to join the Turk Murphy band. How did a set work? Did you come on for two or three numbers a set, or did you do
No, I didn't do the whole set. I usually came on to do the last three or four numbers of the set, and that's why I always ended it with Turk, you know, the last three or four numbers of the set. And he and I always did wonderful tunes together. He wrote the lyrics, and he would take a tune like Just Because, which was an old, not a country and western, I'd say one of the popular tunes of the day. And he'd take songs like Butter and Egg Man. He'd write a part for himself, and I'd write a part. Yeah, I mean, he'd give me a part. And like, for instance, one of the tunes, he'd say, just like a chicken, you're squawking all day. You'd scare any rooster with ideas away. And those little things that we'd go back and forth, what they call sass in those days. Butter, Beans, and Susie did that, and then Velma Millington and Louis Armstrong did it like that. We had all kinds of songs, and especially Go Back Where You Stayed Last Night, you know. We had this sass going back and forth, and of course the audience. And I've never sung these tunes with anybody else except Turk. We just had a rapport that was just right.
Obviously Turk had a very theatrical knowledge of the stage. He could just put things across to an
audience. Oh, yes. He loved the circus. He absolutely loved the circus. When the circus would come down, he'd go to just to hear the music. He loved the way the musicians would go on and on and on and never get a break. And if you ever listen to Murphy records, you know that there's a little circus feeling in his music and some of his fast tunes, like 1919 Rag and some of those things. And that's my feeling about it, you know.
Rabbits for to chase away the hoodoo. When you hit good old town. Bob, there's Miss Consola Davis, and there's Miss Gondola Bound. There is Miss Johanna Beasley, she is all dressed in red. I just hugged her and I kissed her, then she said,
please, oh please, oh, do not let me fall.
Pat Yankee with Turk Murphy's band doing one of their regular set-closing routines. Circus-influenced as Turk's music may have been, it always seemed to me to have its heart in the right place as far as being jazz was concerned. Turk just couldn't help himself from playing honest and swinging jazz, and in that he stands apart from another West Coast institution that perhaps epitomises the circusy, good-time side of traditional jazz, the group of Disney animators and artists who called themselves the Firehouse 5 Plus 2. Pat Yankee agrees.
I think Turk was more authentic. The Firehouse Five were a group of fellows from Disney, as you know, and they just had more or less fun with everything. And they wore the fire hats and the red BVDs and the overalls and that type of thing. They didn't make fun of it, but it wasn't as traditional as Turk. Turk was very serious about his music.
Firehouse 5 Plus 2 all very accomplished musicians, as I discovered when I played a few gigs with their reed player, George Probert, who'd also been a Kid Ory sideman, but who never quite lost the aesthetic values of the cartoon world in which most of them worked. Turk Murphy, by contrast, was deadly serious about his music, and, as Pat Yankee told me, without him, it's unlikely there'd be any kind of traditional jazz played in the San Francisco area today.
Actually, Turk, he had a lot of young people that came into his band, and he'd take young people he thought had a lot of potential for his kind of music, and when he did hire them, he would really school them, and they'd have to know certain tunes, and he'd write out certain arrangements for them, so they would, and by the time he finished with these people, they'd leave the band, they could read, they could write music, they could do almost anything. It's like John Gill, for instance, when John Gill came at a very young age, and by the time John left Turk's band, John could get his own band. And most of these people, they liked the music to begin with, but when you finished with Turk, you even liked it more, basically, you know.
One of the names mentioned by Pat Yankee was John Gill, a multi-instrumentalist who played banjo, drums, and reeds with Turk Murphy, and who's recently led a band at a Union Square club for some time, playing trombone. John's also been a guiding light in the San Francisco Traditional Jazz Foundation, an organization dedicated to preserving this music. So I asked John what the essential qualities of a Turk Murphy-style band actually were, especially during those years at Earthquake Magoons when the band sounded as powerful as ever but had no drummer.
With that band, it seemed very natural because of the way the band had been set up. Now, he had drums for many years. A lot of people think back of the Murphy Band as being a drummerless band. It was a drummerless band only for portions of its career. The first records by Turk, of course, are drummerless, and then the 50s period is only like basically a five-piece band and drummerless. But he had people like Thad Vanden and Smokey Stover who did long residencies with the band on drums, and he used no banjo. I think he brought a banjo in on the weekends. There was a guy, a local guy.
It must be Frank Haggerty.
Frank Haggerty, thank you. And Frank's still around, actually. And he would come in and play the weekends, and it would be a seven-piece band on the weekends. But I found with Bill Carroll and Pete Clute that just the banjo worked fine. And with the band's approach to tempo and things, it seemed to work pretty well. It was pretty easy. You'd accent two and four pretty heavy, which I was fine with.
Yeah. And with Carroll's tuba playing, I mean, presumably he was switching between sometimes doing more melodic things and then just keeping the beat going.
Yeah, Turk had a very specific tuba part, and he liked Bill because Bill might have been, of all, maybe Turk's very favorite tuba player, because he had a sound when he'd play solos rarely, but when he did, he had what Turk liked to describe as kind of a lonesome sound on the tuba, which he liked, you know. He was also fond of Bob Short, who was quite a technician. He was not quite as fond of the Lamy school of tuba playing. He liked more ability on the horn because he liked to have interesting bass lines and things set in the arrangement. And Bill adhered to them very well and was also a real natural tuba player. He learned to play tuba, actually, to play in the band. He was a trombone player and string bass player up to the point he joined Turk. And he got a tuba, learned how to play, and was just a natural. And he just played the... He didn't ornament the part. Like, Turk had a habit of saying, if I had wanted it that way, I would have written it that way, if you played something he didn't like. So Bill, in his days with the band, was a very solid tuba player, very easy to work with, made my life very easy.
Thank you.
Jelly Roll Morton's The Pearls, played by a 1978 Turk Murphy drumless lineup with John Gill on banjo. As I said, John Gill's been a leading light in the area's traditional jazz foundation, and its president is another former Turk Murphy band member, clarinetist William Carter.
There was a fellow named Jim Goggin who started the foundation. It began as a kind of mania of his for collecting Turk Murphy stuff of all sorts, not just recordings, but three-dimensional objects out of old bars where he'd once played, and photographs and clippings, lots of clippings of Lou Waters' band from the very beginning. And Lou, so we're talking about the period from about 1939 up until when Jim stopped this, which was, it was literally chasing him out of his home. And his wife was also about to chase him out of his home if he didn't do something about all this. So he actually retired at that point, and he formed a nonprofit foundation and donated these things to a foundation and put them in storage and moved away. And the foundation then acquired its nonprofit status in that way and essentially went moribund for several years. And there, he had some fellows on his board who asked me to come on as chairman something like 8 years ago. And kind of see what we could do about this collection that was just sitting there, nothing happening. So it was a collection, a very idiosyncratic collection. It was his own personal taste. And he was a real collector, though. I mean, he had all the qualities of jazz collectors. And he had done, I think, one or two issues of records, but hardly very serious. So very little had been done about this. Later, he did some books about the story. A book about Turk Murphy and with Pete Clute about the history of San Francisco jazz. So it began that way, and since when I came on, we were still actually wondering about how to make it a public access collection. We're talking to one university about that, and they're trying to get a jazz curator in their library first and blah, blah, blah. But that's a very expensive proposition to have a proper curated collection. And as we know, many collections, even that are well set up, still have continuing problems like the one at Tulane. Anyway, that's a hope. In the meantime, we've done other things to use the collection and issue books, CDs, our quarterly newsletter, and have membership. We have lots of worldwide members as well as U.S. members. There are little clutches of diehard, rabid fans of this San Francisco music.
live session by Turk Murphy, one of the inaugural record issues from the San Francisco Traditional Jazz Foundation. Later this year, more material's due out on their own label, and that'll include a good cross-section of Murphy's ragtime arrangements, plus some excellent examples of the band in its prime in the 1950s. One way or another, I did get the feeling that this is the strength of the Foundation, preserving the past rather than fostering the music for the future. Although all the musicians I've spoken to this week are still actively playing in the area, notably the incredible Bob Helm, still going strong at 84. I'll end this San Francisco week with Bob's own latest CD, but for a final reflection, here's John Gill, who's planning to return to his native New York, finally driven out of San Francisco by what I can only describe as contemporary Californian attitudes.
People don't go out and drink anymore. They don't go out and drink. They don't go out. It's illegal. You can't smoke anywhere anymore. I mean, that whole atmosphere is gone now. Everything's been done to kill it, you know, and for good reason. You know, smoking's not healthy. Drinking's not healthy. But it's fun, and, you know, I think that as that begins to disappear, jazz can't survive. I think that jazz is so often taken out of its environment and has been taken out of its environment for so many years now that it's really stilted and decaying, you know, barely alive. It needs the atmosphere of a bar where, you know, where people are meeting, where you meet people, you meet friends, you drink too much, you do other things you're not supposed to or whatever. It's all part of that atmosphere. And I think, for me, it's been cleaned up a little too much. You know, this concert stage approach to jazz or the jazz festival scene today where everyone sits in stunned silence in a big fluorescent light bulb lit auditorium, there's something missing from that for me.
Bob Helms' Hotter Than That jazz band with Artie Matthews' ragtime piece, Weary Blues, and that comes from Bob's 1998 release, Ma and Bessie's Great Tent Show, on the Stomp Off label. There's a very different interpretation of classic ragtime on Monday night, when I'll be back for a week featuring pianist Marcus Roberts with his contemporary interpretations, both of early jazz and the rags, of Scott Joplin.
And Alan Shipton returns at 11:30 on Monday night for that edition of Jazz Notes. The programme is produced for BBC Radio 3 by Terry Carter at BBC Birmingham.